Hello, welcome to the Wasting Time podcast. I'm Chris. I'm here with Nick. Hello, Nick.
Afternoon, evening, morning, wherever it is, wherever you are.
We're just going to keep this intro pretty short because we've just recorded the conversation that you're about to hear. So we won't get into new releases and stuff like that this time. But we've recorded a few episodes recently, so we'll do that next time. I think, Nick, does that sound good to you?
Yeah, I mean, have we talked about any gigs? Recent gigs we've been to? I feel like, have we chatted about your Bleachers gig?
No, not at all. Yeah.
Because that's probably worth talking about, because that looked pretty special.
Okay, we can do that quickly. Yeah, it was amazing. You know, both yourself and me are big fans of Bleachers, Jack Antonoff's band, and they were playing a couple of gigs in Kingston, close to where I live, and I managed to get tickets to the early evening one. So I went along with my wife and our friend Sophie, and it's great, man. It was, you know, short set, because obviously they had a 5 o'clock doors one, a 7 o'clock doors one, but completely worth it. And have you ever seen them live before?
No, mate. No. And I'm disappointed we didn't. My brother actually went to the Manchester.
I saw game. That. Did he enjoy himself?
Yeah. Yeah, he said it was like one of the best he's ever been to.
Yeah.
So yeah, he definitely came away from that very impressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt like your show was like really small venue-ish. Like,
yeah, it looked cool. Yeah, for Bleachers, for how big they are now in the UK, it was pretty small. It was at Prism in Kingston. It was amazing, yeah. Because I think I sent you a video and you said, oh, you side stage. And I'm like, no, it's just where I'm stood in the crowd. Yeah, it was great.
But they did a bit of old and new. Yeah.
Nice mix.
Within their short
set. Yeah, nice mixture. Only a couple off the new album and, yeah, a lot of the classics. And, yeah, it was... You know, they properly put on a show, and it was really fun. We got home that night, and straight away, my wife and I bought tickets for their Brixton Academy show that's happening late in the summer. So, look forward to seeing them again.
Oh, nice!
Yeah,
nice. I see our friends have just announced the Brixton Academy.
Oh, yeah, Elvana. Yeah, let's give them a shout out. Yeah, that's
yeah. Rob was actually complaining that we haven't invited them on the show, but. At least we do give them plenty of shout-outs.
Oh, we do. Yeah, always love an Elvana shout out. Listeners, if you haven't noticed us doing that before, check out Elvana, Elvis fronted Nirvana, old friends of us, absolutely killing it, and their latest
old drummer of our band.
Absolutely,
as well.
Absolutely. So
you forgot to mention that.
I should have mentioned that. Sorry, yeah, but we go back a long way with that guy, and yeah, they've just announced that they will be headlining Brixton Academy, which is kind of like their next step up from their journey to take over the world. So absolutely thrilled for them as always. Yeah, you went to, if we're talking about gigs we've been to comparatively recently, you went to see former guest on this show, Vinny, not that long ago.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Down to Leeds. Yeah, I think it was the tour of, the movie life's tour of 40 Hour Train Back to Penn, which personally is like one of my top fives of like the pop punk rock kind of album record list. So it was a no-brainer for me to have a drive down to Leeds for that.
Nice.
Yeah, it was fucking awesome. Yeah, they, you know, Benny knows what he's doing. He's been around the block a long time. Did 40-hour Train Back to Penn from front to back, and then did like a I say an encore. You know, they didn't go off. They just carried on and did some other tunes from, you know, their earlier records, Has a Gambling Problem and stuff. So, yeah, very cool night. Yeah.
Sounds fun.
Trophy eyes this weekend for me as well. So I'm going back to Leeds.
Lovely.
You will
have just seen that when this is released. So I hope you had a good time at it.
Yeah. We'll come back round and I'll give you my honest opinion. I'm not like a huge Trophy Eyes fan. I just love the most recent record.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see how the live show pans out. So, yeah.
Nice.
We shall wing back round with my thoughts.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing that. And then maybe that time we'll talk about some new music that's come out recently.
And you'll be able to talk about the Mest show soon as well. Mest, they're coming up in start of June.
Yeah, well,
crossing,
I think so. I think it's safe to say we'll have a few episodes out between now and then. But yeah, so listeners have to wait a little bit for that. But yeah, that's we might as well use that.
Let's just segue into the episode then.
Yeah, yeah. So today we had Tony Lovato from Mist returning to the show after nearly 5 years, which we were thrilled to talk to him again because Nick and I are, as regular listeners will know, like longtime fans of Mist. And we always enjoy a chance to catch up with Tony, releasing a new single this coming week on 11th of April, When We Were Young. If you're listening to this on the 11th of April afterwards, check it out now. And I think let's just jump into the chat.
Good morning, good evening, whatever the fuck it is.
It's 6:45 in the evening over here, so yeah.
Early evening for us.
A little late start. Well, yeah, kids and shit, and me and my son, none of my 9-year-old stayed up watching Garbage Pail Kids. Have you ever seen the movie, the Garbage Pail Kids movie?
I can't say I have. What about you, Nick?
No, I do have a little one, but she's only one, so it's probably...
Yeah, this isn't something that like your little one would want to watch anyways. It's something that we grew up with in the 80s.
Okay, yeah.
I'm just saying, like, if you get a minute, like, just search on your phone, like, Garbage Pail Kids movie trailer. It's fucking, it's amazing. It's like little people in garbage pail. Did you guys have Garbage Pail Kids growing up? You know what I'm talking about, right? The cards and shit?
Yeah.
Fucked up characters and shit, you know?
Like fucking
Farting Frank and shit like that. So they had like 6 of them in these horrific Garbage Pail Kids outfits. And it's just like the stupidest movie from the 80s. But I was like, I don't know how I never knew about it. And I sent it to my brother and he's like, you don't remember that movie? And I was like, no. So I forced my son to watch it, and he fell asleep halfway through because he hated it. He thought this is terrible comedy. I'm like, I know, but that's the charm of it. I'm like, you're trying to. But yeah, so I ended up falling asleep on the couch and shit. I woke up around fucking 10, and I was like, oh shit! I had to wake my wife up and be like, hey, I need the room for a second. So, but here we are.
Yeah, all good, and we appreciate you being here. And also, real quick, thank you for collaborating on that post of us the other day
for sure.
We're giving away a copy of that record of yours. That was awesome, so we really appreciate it.
Yeah, it looked like I got a good response. Look, my shoes getting
she's right here, man. There you go.
So nice.
It's right here. There you go.
Nice.
Although this isn't the copy, I don't think we're giving away, is it?
No, that's your very much beloved copy, Nick, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. Still to be spun though, to be honest. So need to get that sorted.
Let's introduce ourselves real quick, because Tony, we've crossed paths a little bit over the years. Like we've both like said quick hellos to you at shows and stuff, and you've kind of been on this show before, albeit like it's nearly 5 years now, so it's been a minute.
You still use the coffee cup?
Oh yeah, I forgot that we said.
Thing about it, I should go grab. I'm drinking a coffee because I do like iced coffee now, but I still have the coffee cup.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. But yeah, anyway, so yeah, we're Chris and Nick from the Wasting Time podcast. I'm based just out of London, and let Nick say his
I'm
bit.
Up in Newcastle upon Tyne, up in the northeast, so yeah, quite away from.
So will we be seeing you guys soon then? I know we're playing fucking London, right? We're doing 2 shows here coming up. I'm assuming that's somewhat by you guys, right? Obviously
near me, so I'm actually at both shows because I try and catch you guys whenever you come through town, and I'm actually managing a band who's opening for you on the first night as well. So I've got
what are they called?
They're called Sharp Eyes. They're they've got. I mean, obviously, I'm going to say this is their manager, but they have a very cool sound. It's kind of like, you know, pop punk from the sort of Mest era, but very kind of British sounding, like the singing, like you can hear like his British accent in the singing, and
the shit that
really
we
well,
tend to do. The shit that we're trying to mimic.
so those 2 London dates is 5th and 6th of June. What's the plan for them? I assume they're not going to be the same both nights. See,
oh yeah, two different sets, isn't it?
Yeah, that was sort of the thing. They're like, hey, you guys want to do 2 nights? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, it's sort of weird to do 2 nights. I'm like, but maybe I'm like, which is like, fuck, I don't know why I committed to this, because like, when people request songs live, they're always like, you play this. And I'm like, look at the guys. I'm like, we don't know it. Because it's not like, we usually just practice like whatever set we're going to do. We'll rehearse that before we go out on a tour, because it's a lengthy tour. And always have a couple songs within it that we could go, hey, like, let's add this or something. I'm working in the set. Like, usually I write a set with my, with 28 years of experience of playing live going, how is this going to fucking roll through the, you know, like it's got to sort of be a roller coaster of a set. And so like, if shit doesn't work, then I'll be like, all right, let's swap this, whatever. We have a couple songs to put in and out, but to be like, yo, yeah. Okay. Yeah. It was my idea. I don't know why I fucking came up with it. I'm like, we'll just do two different sets each night. And I'm just like, that is so much work for us.
Right.
Pre-tour, just to be doing a different set one night out of the fucking 2 weeks of touring, you know. But
yeah,
so it'll, yeah, I mean, it'll be like two different sets, and then obviously we'll do like the ending three songs are sort of our thing that we do, like with the drawing board rooftops, Cadillacs, shit like that, like where we do like our sort of outro, so to speak, of the show. Yeah. So that'll be the same every night, but we're definitely gonna do, we're gonna try to do two sets. See what happens.
Nice. What does the rest of that European tour look like?
As far as the dates and shit?
Well, yeah, just in terms of where you're heading.
It's a good question.
Put you on the spot there.
It's a lot of Germany, which is weird. I noticed that because right. we've done Europe a couple times. And then I noticed when we were when we were looking at the date and the dates are coming in, like, because we're working with Spam Records over there now, and they're from Austria. So it's like Austria, Germany is like they're sort of main markets that they're always good with their festivals and shit.
Yeah.
And so I remember I was like, yo, I'm like, I just noticed, I'm like, we're just doing a shit ton of Germany shows. I'm like, every time we've ever toured over in Europe, it's sort of like Germany once, maybe twice. I don't even know if, you know, there's multiple Germany dates. I'm like, can that happen? I'm like, is Germany that big enough? Like, is there enough people? So yeah, I mean, we're doing because we go up to the UK, which wasn't even part of it at first. And I'm like, why are we so just stuck in one area? So yeah, London came up, and then Italy snuck in there, Paris. So we're still, but yeah, I think like, you know, like it's, I think it fucking starts in Germany too. But then we do a little bit of, I'm trying to see the fucking dates here. I mean, I try to keep my brain organized for this shit, but it's a little bit of, yeah, see, yeah, it's like Belgium, Germany, Austria, then we do Italy, then Germany again, then Austria, then Germany, then France, UK, UK, Germany, Germany. So it's so like
a lot of Germany then.
I'm doing a fucking Germany tour, is what
I've been figuring out. But that's good. There's such a big scene in Germany. Like, even if you haven't been there. Yeah. So I reckon that even if you haven't been there that much, there's got to be a lot of Mest fans there.
Yeah. My friends, you know, 30-0.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I was talking to one of them, and they, or maybe it was my buddy Brent, who's doing from the band Taken Days, that's touring with us. He's like, yeah, like the punk scene in Germany is just sort of like something sort of back again. Like it's, I don't know, like picked up again. Like, I don't know if it's all Spam Records doing, but they're definitely honing in on that market. And people keep telling me that like I've always seen Spam Records, and I've been talking to them for years, always about doing the festival. Shit just never worked out.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where I've watched the festival get bigger, bigger. I've watched the name sort of get bigger. And it's sort of like what I experienced in the early 90s and stuff, 2000s with Epitaph and Fat Records, like the way that it was here in the States, or Drive Thru did it for a little bit. But it seems like they're sort of doing the same thing over in that market. So I was like, that was the concept of working together. I'm like, if you guys got your market down and you want to work together, like, yeah, I'm down.
It makes sense. Yeah. Be a good partnership.
Cool. So should we talk a little bit about the single then? Obviously got a single and an album on the way. Tell us a little bit about the single to start with, I guess.
So the single, I can't remember where into the record we were at when we wrote it, but I wrote this record definitely differently than I have other records, where normally I would be in my bedroom or somewhere, like sort of playing acoustic guitar. I started putting pieces together like in my own home studio. But instead I decided to go start meeting up with my buddy Taylor. Carroll, he plays drums in the band Lit.
Yeah.
And he sort of dived into the world of producing, and he's, besides a drummer, he's a singer, songwriter, guitarist, shit like that too. which I was always a drummer first too. So our songwriting styles, and when we're writing stuff, it's very easy to work together when you're both coming from like drums and guitar. Like it's an easy concept. But yeah, so we just had been writing songs, and it was one of those songs where I was driving to the studio, and his little studio spot was up in like the highest house on like fucking, I don't know if it's Mulholland Drive that I drove. It's like the Coldwater Canyon bullshit. You get into like the, like I could see like Marky Mark's fucking house.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Like a mile away, but it was that big. Yeah. You could still see it. This isn't his house. He was using a room in it for his studio. So on the drive there, I would always just listen to music, you know, like it's like whenever I'm writing records, I'm careful to what I listen to when I'm in that process, because I know what my band is. I know what songs I want to be putting out there, at least under the blanket of Mest. Yeah. So I'm very careful of what I'm listening to because everything's going to influence me, you know, like you, having a 2-year-old daughter and listening to fucking kids songs all day. I have to be careful because that shit gets stuck in your head, right? So then when you're writing music, all of a sudden you're going to start writing fucking kids bop by accident, not realizing it, you know? So, but I would listen to all the shit I grew up listening to on the way there, listen to certain parts of songs or something that I was like, fuck, this part's really cool. Like just to sort of like feed, like get a buffet of ideas in my head and head in the studio and be like, you know, what's rad. Like it'd be cool if we did this and this, and like, imagine if this song was combined with this song, or like I had this idea, and like, then he would just spit it back. And it was like, it was just like this quick formation of songs, and he's sort of ADHD and so am I. So when I'm working, it's like, okay, track this for me. You know, I got this idea. I'm tracking it. While he's tracking it, I've already had like 8 more things come up in my head that I'm trying to yell at him and trying to get him to do. And he's like, hold on, write it down. So like, I would literally be like, it was just, you know, it's like a, it's, what is it? It's like controlled chaos, so to speak. And so, yeah. So when we started writing, when we were young, we had an idea of what, what type of song I wanted to create. And it was sort of like the concept of like, I feel like Mess has written through our career, a good amount of like anthems that have sort of held the test of time or become something for people, where I see people now, you know, and people that I've maybe become friends with, and like, yeah, dude, fucking, this was our, like listening to fucking Rooftops when we were fucking 21 years old. This was our summer song that we would like, this was our song, you know, or Jaded was our song. Like I did a podcast yesterday for Hunter DeBonk. I think that's how you say his name, and found out that like Jaded was their graduating song for their high school, you know, like that's huge. Like that song will always be something to those people. And so when I was writing the song, when we were young, I sort of had that in mind of like, I want to write an anthem for people like us, like people that grew up listening to punk rock, had these decades of our teen years and our young adulthood, and then heading into our, I don't want to say mid adulthood, but heading into our beeline, our straight line of adulthood, that still give a fuck about music, still go to shows, are having families, maybe not, depending on where you're at in life, but a celebration of like that, but still like, not without it being like, well, those days are over with, so to speak, but just singing about it and sort of like, because there are lines in the song, and I could send you guys a link when we're done here to check it out, but there's lyrics where it's like, I'm sort of singing about like when you're younger and all these feelings and thoughts that you have. And then as you get older, like they turn into this other sort of like forced reality sometimes of like all my dreams turn into nightmares. Like not necessarily like, because you're like, fuck, I don't want to be doing this. I still want to be doing that, you know? And I always feel like you're never too old to do anything. I don't feel like there's a limit for anything. I've watched friends that are actors and like become the biggest actors in the world, you know, like there's people that I used to go to the gym with, and I'm not gonna name drop right now, but like that are massive. And I remember sitting at like after like an AA meeting when I was sober and talking with one of my friends who was an actor, and he had a big part in a movie when he first moved out to California, nothing for years. And I remember like thinking like, I wonder if this will ever hit for him. Good looking dude, like, but there's so many people in LA, right? And I remember thinking to myself, like, well, the only people that ever fail are the ones that give up. I'm like, I've seen people just push and push and push. And at some point, if you're that person that's still striving for something, you'll hit something at some mark. Not everybody has to be up here. You can make a career out of a lot of things. It doesn't have to be fucking stadiums. It doesn't have to be the biggest movies. You know what I mean? Like, there is ways to sustain and have a career. I mean, I'm sort of living proof of it without, you know, like having the fucking, you know, the massive mainstream hits and shit like that. And you put a lot of work into it, undoubtedly. But still, like, I get to wake up every day and complain about my back at 11 o'clock in the morning because I didn't have to get up at 8. Well, besides when my kids are in fucking school, but my kid's off right now. But yeah, so I was trying to encapsulate all of that into this song of, like, I'm singing to myself in a way and to, like, other people, like, about not giving up on your dreams, about not, you know, just settling for, like, this is life. Like, there's still shit out there for everybody, you know? And, but being surrounded by my kids, I have little ones, and then I have, like, 9-year-old, 12-year-old, 16-year-old. It's like being able to live vicariously through them a little bit, where I get to see them experiencing their firsts and, you know, simple things of taking these kids to, like, theme parks and shit like that. And I'm, like, scared to go on fucking roller coasters. And I remember, you know, like, all that exciting shit that we did as kids, our first times, I get to live again. And I love doing that shit anyways. So having the ability to experience it with people that I love and that I'm, like, trying to create these core memories with, it's inspiring to me to remember, like, on those times where I still sometimes I'm like, is this enough? Did I do enough? Is it time? I'm like, fuck no. Like, this is who I am. This is what I want to do. And it's just sort of that anthem for, like, people our age. It's our new anthem, you know, of, like, still singing about when we were young, but fucking, you know, still pursuing bigger things. You know what I mean? Hopefully that fucking 15-minute explanation sums up something.
No, it's good.
Two sentences.
So the full length is, I read somewhere, like, is this going to be one of, like, in three parts? Is it going to be, how's that going to work if that's true?
Yeah. So, sort of in, like, because of how much me and Taylor like to write together and how much we've been writing, and sort of the way the music business is now, because we're still a DIY label, like, I was able to organize a deal with Spam over there in Europe for distribution and help with promotion and all that shit. And then was able to sign a deal with a label in Japan to help with distribution and all that shit. But here in the States, like, unless you have 1 million TikTok followers, like, I'm not going to say the names of the labels, but that's who they want to sign these days. And then they're going to hire the same 5 dudes that I know to write their record. So things are a little bit different when it comes to releasing music here in the States. Thankfully, though, you can still get your music out there. It's just, instead of, like, share, I watched a little clip of Sherry that owns Veeps and stuff. Who was saying, like, the way that the deals are made now, like, realistically, like she said, it's like a high interest loan.
Yeah,
to a band.
Yeah, it's exactly what she said to me.
Yeah. And the fact, and it's a true statement, you know, and it makes sense. And it's like, so for us here in the States, if there was a label that wanted to work with us, it would have to make sense.
Okay.
Logistically, you know, financially, it would all have to make sense. So we're doing it ourselves because there's nothing out there that I can't sort of do myself right now. There's nothing that's presented itself that's bigger than what I can do with marketing, advertising, distribution, like shit like that, you know? So there's no point in signing my record off to a label that promises 3 records and then, you know, stops you at 1 and then now the record's fucked and, you know. So here in the States, it's like, I want to keep putting out music. So we have this record coming out, songs written, some songs recorded already that need to be finished, mixed, stuff like that. So the concept is, like, put out some songs, put out this record. While all this shit's happening, keep finishing the next record, keep finishing the next record and sort of do this like three-part thing where they will sort of combine in a way. And, you know, it's like you got to just keep putting out music these days. Like, we come from an era where we could still do the thing of like we did with Masquerade, where it's like put out a couple singles, drop the record, and there it is. But like, realistically, man, like, then you drop that record, 6 months, people are listening to it nonstop. Other shit's being pushed onto them. And in that time, you got to go, okay, I got a year, I got to fucking write and record a record and put it out. If I'm going to keep everybody's attention that just had that record, it's just how it is. And so it's more of like adapting to how the music, how people consume music now, and making sure that I can keep putting shit out to keep people giving a fuck about the band, because we're coming up on 30 years. So it's and I think it's cool to constantly just be putting out music too. And it forces me to keep writing. I need deadlines. Yeah. In my life, like, otherwise shit just doesn't get done the way my brain works. So if I have a plan, I have something that's set, it sort of keeps me organized, it keeps me writing, it keeps me productive. So yeah, it's going to be like sort of like a little three-part thing here.
I mean, going back to kind of your sentiment around the song, I used to be a big skater boy in my teenage years and noticed Mr. Steve Caballero, and you had Rick Thorne as well in the video kind of preview. What's the story of that? How far back does your relationship go with those guys? And
so Rick, fuck man, Rick, I've known for 20 to 2002, so whatever that is, over 2 decades, I've known Rick. Met him on Warp Tour. Friends through friends type of thing. And then living out in LA, we'd see him out all the time, became friends. We'd go out together. We did I don't know, 10 years ago, did fucking New Year's together. We'd go to clubs together, just shit like that. He was at my son's baby shower and shit. So I've known Rick for a long time. I had his band Good Guys in Black play with us before it shows here in California. And then Calero, I met him about 5 years ago when I was like asking him for a photo. He was at one of our shows. We were on tour with Mill and Colin.
Oh, yeah.
And he's at the show. And I'm like, hey, babe, can you, I'm going to go take a photo with that guy right there. She knows who he is too. But I was like, can you take a photo for me? She's like, yeah. So he's like, yeah, for sure. We take a photo at that. I didn't know that he knew who our band was. I didn't know that he liked the band.
Okay.
And then one day I posted a clip of when we were doing, when we had to do those internet shows because everything was in fucking lockdown. Mm-hmm. And I posted a clip of the song Chelsea, which, unless you sort of know the band, you're not really going to know that song, so to speak.
Bit of a deep cut.
And yeah. And so he left a comment on it. This was always one of my favorite songs. And I saw that and I'm like, what the f-? So I screenshot, I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I'm like, well, if he knows that song, then he does really know the band. Like, I didn't, you know what I mean? Like, that makes sense. And then, yeah, so we just became fucking, and we DM'd each other a couple of times, like, through just talking back and forth on, like, fucking Instagram and stuff. And becoming friends that way. And then he was in Japan with a friend over there that does our shows. They sent a photo one night, and I was like, oh, shit. I'm like, what's up, guys? Like, because they were together, and it was right around that time we were going to shoot the video, and he was in Japan. And I was like, yo, we're shooting this video. I don't know when, if you're going to be back. And he fucking, the day we were shooting the video is the day that he fucking landed back from Japan. And he lives a solid like hour and 20 minutes from me. So he's like, if I could make it up, you know, I'll cruise up. And I'm like, all right. And so, like, we're shooting the video, and Rick, I know Rick coming because Rick's in LA, and he's started like, "Yeah, man, I'm on my way." I was not really sure Steve was going to show up. Granted, respectfully, he just finished a fucking 14-hour flight, so like, I would get it why he wouldn't want to jump in a car and drive an hour and 20 minutes to come be in a video, and then he hit me up. He's like, "Hey, dude, I'm on my way," and I'm like, oh, "Fuck yeah, rad, Steve's coming." So I drove up, and then I just had the idea of the shop because having Rick and Steve in the video, I'm like, these are old school dudes, like before my generation, even that I saw on TV and sport magazines and all that shit, you know? Yeah. And I'm like, well, I'm like, my son's here, my stepson's here, my buddy's kid's here, could play a little cab. And I was like, I got this idea for this fucking shot. And that was the sort of flip shot we do where we're singing the hook of the chorus, yep. And it goes, switches from them to us, which I think is like the dopest shot. I'm like, that's so fucking cool. Like it's, and eventually that, yeah, that became the cover of the record. Cause I was like, this is way too cool of a fucking shot just to have in the video. But yeah,
it ties up nicely with the song as well, right? And what it's all about.
For sure. Like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the title of the record is Youth. So like that, you know, worked out. But yeah, I mean, they're those dudes that are fucking legendary dudes in the business that any kid or band coming up need to take a fucking class from them of how to act when you've been successful and around for years, the way that they treat people.
Yeah.
They're just the most humble fucking good dudes that like, that I still look up to, like, that's what you need to be like when you're successful. You know what I mean?
And obviously we've got, Jarrett on the song as well. I've heard you talk about this quite a bit recently, but just, yeah, do you want to just give us a little bit about your relationship with him, which I think goes back a couple of decades as well, I guess?
Yes. Same era, same, you know, like, fucking Warped Tour 03 together, bunch of festivals in Japan, and you know, like the following years, and toured together again then in like 2019, which is decades later, and then again last fall. Jarrett's always been a big fucking supporter of Mest. Mm-hmm. Just an all around good dude. Like anybody that you meet that knows Jarrett's gonna have nothing but nice things to say about him. Just a fucking good, fun dude. And I think that's why our crew sort of bonded with their crew on Warped Tour, because it was like, we were just the dudes trying to party and have a good time and laugh. And so whoever was down with that type of environment, we were going to become friends with. And that's the bands that I swear like that we're still friends with to this day, is like the people that weren't too fucking cool for school, that were just down to have a good time. It wasn't about like fucking punk cred fucking point and shit. It was just like, we're all here doing the same shit, you know? And yeah, I remember like that was the Warped Tour 2003 when my back was fucked up. So I had to leave for some surgery shit. So the bus was leaving. We still wanted to sell merch on the tour. So I think Bowling for Soup took our guys for a couple of days. And like Suicide Machines took our guys for a couple of days just to get us to the next shows. But yeah, I mean, you know, just fucking good dude. And it was like, we had that tour coming up and I was writing the record at the time and I was like, yo, you want to jump on a song? And, you know, and he was like, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it just so happened that like that was a song, I was like, that worked perfectly with the way that the verses are sung, sort of the tag back and forth sort of shit. Yeah. That seemed to work out. And then we're like, well, this should be our single too. So that fucking works out. And I'm like, are you down to be on the single? He's like, yeah, absolutely. I'm like, all right, cool. There's always legal shit that comes along with that type of shit. And so it can be a hang up for a while dealing with that type of shit. But then when it's your good friend doing it, they're just like, yeah, let's get through this, you know, like, because the other people around people can slow shit
down.
Yeah,
when you get managers involved and stuff, you know.
Right. Yeah, she can start to fucking, yeah. But yeah, like we wanted to release it earlier. But like I said, like for a band like us doing the DIY shit, we got to make sure all of our ducks are in a row before we release a record.
Yeah.
Have to have everything lined up. And I mean, you know, unfortunately, like we just couldn't get it out in time for the Bowling for Soup tour we did last fall.
Yep.
But, but it is what it is. And, you know, April 11th, it's coming out and, hoping that people fucking like it. We'll see.
Awesome. It's got like, I mean, the hook on the chorus sounds great. It sounds like proper traditional early Mest, if you will. I mean, I assume that's what you were going for, and is that kind of like a taste of what at least the first part of the record's going to be like?
Yeah, it wasn't like I wouldn't like somebody wrote a comment and they're like, this sounds forced.
Okay.
And somebody wrote that shit, and I always find that shit like so funny. Like somebody, like I feel like people like feel like they have to have an opinion of something like that. It's got to be like overthinking shit. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if anybody were to listen to that song and listen to Messed from the 28 fucking years prior, how would you think that that song was the song that was forced?
Yeah.
It sounds like a fucking, it's just a mess song. Yeah. Like it's simple, plain fucking pop punk hook jump feel to it. Like it's a fucking mess song. Like, no, it's not forced. That's literally what I've done for 28 years. Yeah. That's it. Like simple fucking. But yeah, when we were writing the record, it was obviously a thing where I was like, when I was talking to Taylor, I'm like, I want to write a messed record, dude. Like it's gotta be a messed record. Every record is, you know, like obviously we have our sort of sound, so to speak, but I was definitely interested in making sure that I was writing. If I were, put it this way, if I was, I wanted to write like our early 2000 sound in 2024.
Yeah.
Didn't want it to sound like 2004, but I wanted it, you know, like I wanted it to be like what people know and love of Messed.
Yeah.
And I wanted to hear that. I wanted to hear that record again, you know? I mean, I love listening to my records. Like there's, if you don't like listening to your own music, it's like liking your own fucking kids. Like why the fuck would you, you know what I mean? Like there's another dude in a band. That's a very big pop punk band, same era, hates his band. And I don't understand why. And I'm like, you guys have the best hooks. Doesn't want to listen to his own band ever. Doesn't even know if the songs are good. Has to ask one of his friends all the time, like, is this a good record? And I'm not going to say who these are.
Nick, who do you think? Is your mind racing, wondering who he's talking about?
I'm not going to say anything who it is. But it's just
it's
strange.
It's bad PR for that band if we say who it is, that's for sure.
But I love listening to, if I write a good song, I'm stoked afterwards. You know, like, it's, I want to hear music that I want to listen to, so to speak. And so when writing this record, it was like, you know, I want to make sure, like, there's certain songs that I love on each record. Like, we always have, like, that one sort of acoustic pop rock song. I'm like, we got to write one. I got to have one of those on the record. Like, and sometimes you go through when you're trying to hit a mark for a song, so to speak, and you're like, or it's taking its own path, and you're like, okay, what is the vibe of this song? And you're like, sort of has the vibe of, like, this. Sometimes it turns out good, sometimes it doesn't, and you move on from it, or it works. For some reason, when we were writing, I mean, there wasn't a single session where we didn't get together and write a song, and we're done. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, we went back, and I had to write lyrics, and maybe we changed some melodies or wrote a bridge or something, but, like, the core of the song, we would sit down with nothing, and we would just write. And by the end of, you know, 12, 16-hour days, and we'd be done. We'd have a fucking song, and like, all right. Now we got to finish this motherfucker. So sometimes we'd take breaks and come back to it if need be, because we were still, next time we got together, started writing something new. But yeah, like it was just an easy, fun writing process, like, which is, I think, how writing records should be, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely. And sorry, Nick, I know you had something there, but, and I'm hogging the questions here, but just something on that, Tony, like, I'm just curious that, so you obviously mentioned all your, you know, you like something from all your previous records, but now that it's been 4 years, like, how do you feel about Masquerades looking back? Is that the record that you thought it was at the time? You know how things sound different over time and stuff. And
no, that's a really, really good question. It's a good question because I've been like pondering it, like, yeah. I go back and listen to it. And I was like, cause I told my old man about this record. He's been listening to it a lot. Like, I was showing my old man shit. Because he's pretty honest about what he thinks. Mm-hmm. He doesn't give a fuck. I'm his kid, right? Yeah. And I've been telling my dad, I'm like, I think this is like our best record. Like, I think this is the best batch of songs that I've written. Like there's great songs on all four records we did with Feldman. I'm like, but I think if I were to, I'd have to like grab a couple from each record that I think are really, really good. And I feel like that's sort of what this record is for me. And then I have to do like the logical thing, like, is it because it's the new shiny toy? Is that why I feel this way? And then going back and listening to Masquerade, I do love that record. Like, when I go back and listen to it, like, when I listen to it, I like it more than I think I liked it. Okay. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm always like, oh, like I have these thoughts of like listening to the new record and stuff. And then thinking about Masquerade, I'm like, God, this record's way better than Masquerade. Right. And then I go back and listen, I'm like, oh, this shit was good. Like, I like this song, like that song. Like, I loved writing that record. That was a very long period of writing. And then that was a way different way that I wrote that record too. Or not that I wrote that record, or the way that I recorded it. I was with Cameron Webb in the studio for like fucking 2 months, yeah, you know. Yeah. The guys flew out for weekends and did their parts that I sent them, like, hey, track this, track that, like showed them the song structure. And but yeah, I don't, I mean, I do love that record for sure. Cameron definitely wanted to do more of like the raw sounding recordings, and which I was cool and I liked it. I like more of the cleaner sound, yeah, that we sort of started, that we did in the early 2000s that everybody is now doing. But I still think it's like, I don't know, there are some songs on there that I fucking love, like The Silence Left Behind is one of my favorite songs I ever wrote, which is different. It's like half, 80% acoustic, electric guitar, you know, like, I love the song Masquerade. I think it's fucking rad. Like, that's one of my favorite songs I've ever written. So yeah, there's definitely some songs on there that I love. I just feel like this record that we're putting out is more like the mess. It's like, if that makes any sense. I just feel like it is.
Yeah, I completely understand what you mean.
But with that being said, I absolutely love Cameron Webb, and I loved working with him too. It was fucking one of the funnest records to make.
That's also, he's a big name to be working with as well.
Yeah, for sure.
You talks about 30 years of Mist coming up. Is that next year, is it?
30 years.
What's your thoughts on kind of that 30-year milestone? What, have you got any ideas of what you want to do? Have you got any plans?
Not die, hopefully. Yeah, no, I was told that yesterday in an interview, like, yeah, Mess is coming up on 30 years. And I was like, no, we got like 2 years before that. And I'm like, fuck, it's 2024, which means, yeah, that's next year. Totally, like, and it was like a moment where it stopped me in the tracks of the interview. And I forgot the question because I was like going through my head, holy fuck, 30 years, dude. You know, because like 26, 27, 28, it's like those are years with it. It's like, that's a lot. But then when you hit that fucking 30 mark, it's, I remember, put it this way, I remember, this is sad, I remember turning 30 years old myself, mm-hmm, like completely remember that birthday. And it doesn't feel that long ago. Sure. But for them to be like saying like the band's turning 30 and I was a fucking teenager when the band, it's, yeah, it's crazy, man. I don't know. Well, I mean, according to the way the music business is, I don't we have to do like a 30th anniversary tour or something, or like a record or something like that? Isn't that what you have to do?
Something like that, I reckon. Yeah,
that's the next fucking move, I guess. Yeah, I don't know, man. Hopefully, honestly, I don't know if we're gonna have anything like big planned or if we're just gonna continue on our path, because as much as like, you know, 30 years is great, like I'm not retiring anytime soon. So why celebrate 30 years when it's, to me, it's, you know, just a year within the career that I'm still on.
Speaking of like your legacy and stuff, like when we were young, the festival, been ignoring you guys or something. Is that, I think you said something along those lines. Like, what's that about? I mean, you know, obviously you won't know the answer to that. I'm just kind of a rhetorical question, but yeah, I don't get that.
So I remember the when we were Young Fest, when it started here at a club in California. Yeah. They would do it outside of the venue, and it's, you know, like it would hold like 5,000 people or something like that. Because my son's mom works at the venue.
Okay.
So I knew about this fest before it went over to Vegas, 80,000 people, Live Nation. Because I think the guy I don't know if he owns it, I'm sure he owns part of it, the one that started here in California, he worked with my son's mom. So I know, he knows me, I know him, he knows of me, maybe, I'm assuming. Worked with my son's mom for 5 years, knows my son, like, I don't know, man. I feel like we're just that band that gets fucking looked over a lot for shit like that. I mean, you can look at that lineup of not this year, but last year.
Yeah, you were the
and,
perfect,
I mean, it's
on that.
Band after band after band that is our friends, toured with, same era. You know what I mean? Like it could have been any tour that we were on in that year, those years. And then there's people on that list where you go, like, it was like pouring like a little bit of salt on the wound, where I'm like, really? Even they're getting to play this and we're not, like, what the fuck, dude? Like, I can't tell you, like, I will say this though. Like, I think fans and people that I know were more distraught than I was, because my phone was just fucking blowing up that day, from personal text messages to like DMs.
Yeah.
And like, are you guys being announced later? And I'm like, nah, man, this is news to me.
Yeah.
Like, it is what it is, you know? I'm sure we'll do it eventually at some point when they run out of bands and they're like, who's left? They're like, oh, now we'll get messed. Right. But no, like, I mean, that was one of the things too. And then when the single came up, I had that song, I've been working on it and doing what I do. Like, I'm listening to the song. The chorus was a little bit different. And I'm laying in bed next to my wife with my earbuds in so she could sleep. It's like 3 a.m. and I'm listening to the song, playing it over and over again. And then I start having these other lines come up in my head.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that sort of seems cool. That seems cool. So I write it down. And then I come up with the hook of the song. And I'm like, fuck, that's it. That's way better than what I have. And that's like, that's the fucking statement. Like, that's my era. That's me. That's my era. That's what I represent. Yeah. And I'm like, wake up my wife. And she's like, what? I'm like, how cool would this be? And like, I sort of like sing it to her. And she's like, yeah, yeah, it's cool. And I'm like, okay. She goes back to sleep. Like, she's like, probably doesn't remember me fucking waking her up. But it just sort of made sense. I was like, with what was happening and us, like, I'm like, I don't know how it, you know, like the universe sort of made it work where it was like, that worked out perfect. Like, we're writing this anthem with this hook line in it. And so I sent it to Taylor and I was like, yo, I got this idea. And he's like, fuck yeah, absolutely. Like, it's cool. But you know, maybe one day we will play When We Were Young on the When We Were Young Fest.
When this new single blows up everywhere. There and, we go. There
we go. And then they'll have to fucking book us. Yeah.
The theme song for the festival.
Yeah.
We had a few kind of nostalgia kind of based questions. So just thinking of those like 30 years of Mest, give us like 3 moments that you would love to just go back and do again.
Warped Tour 2003. Does it count? Can I do like Warped Tour 2003, that entire tour?
Okay. Yeah.
Because I missed out on so much of it because my back was fucked up.
Yeah.
I played shows in wheelchairs. I was in and out of the hospital 4 times. Medical overdose once, which then turned into a rumor that it was like a heroin overdose. And I'm like, dude, just like, I'm just trying to walk here, dude. Like, there ain't fucking no partying going on. But yeah, like, that was my dream tour. And to have had that much medical issues on that tour, that was so debilitating to me. Like, I still had a good time. It was awesome. But like, to be able to go back and experience Warped Tour again the proper way, when, you know, would be awesome. Like, you know, but I would say that would definitely be one of the times, one of the things I wish I could go back. We play in that, within that same, I don't know if I can categorize this within the same thing, but when we were on Warped Tour that year, we played the Jimmy Kimmel live show.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember you showing your back to him like after the performance or something. But
yeah. If I were able to experience that again, due to the same reasons, because I'm in the dressing room. When you play the Jimmy Kimmel show, there's like an outside bar area that everybody gets to hang out at. The guests can go to, like, people just sort of hang out before and then I think a little bit after the show. I'm in the dressing room alone, laying on my face on like a fucking massage bed. We had a masseuse come in because I couldn't move. Yeah. Like, that's how bad my back was. Yeah. So they're like, it was like trying to get me mobile enough to be able to play the TV show. So while I'm just suffering in the fucking dressing room, everybody else is just having the fucking time of their lives. You know, like, Jimmy probably comes out for a little bit, I'm sure, every time. Yeah. Like, not experiencing that, like, looking back on that, like, there's like Zach Galifianakis next to me and that Shia LaBeouf kid. And I'm like, you know, it's one of those experiences, like, fuck, man, like, if I could just go back there and have a more of a straight head because I was on so heavily medicated. That would be one thing.
You got one that wasn't like medication, back related, injury related. What like what stands out as just like a great moment, like that you'd love to do?
Go back and relive. Yeah, I'm just trying to like. There's you know, there's tons of different small little moments, but you know, like I don't know. I went to the fucking. Remember MTV? Do you guys watch MTV from the States over in your country? Did you guys get that, or was it your own MTV?
A bit of both, to be honest. We got our own version, but we would get shows from the States as well.
Right. So they would do the MTV New Year's party.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We'd have to watch that every online year. But yeah, I remember. Yeah,
yeah, and I got to go to one of those, and it was the New Year's. It was called the pajama party.
Okay.
So everybody was naturally wearing pajamas. That was like the theme. And I, being the kid that I was at 22 years old, I don't wear pajamas. I would just wear my fucking tidy whitey underwears to bed. That's what I wore. Yeah. So the entire New Year's party, I walked around with shoes, socks on, and my fucking underwear. And like the most famous, Ashton Kutcher's there, like the chick he was dating at them, like, you know, the most famous people. Yeah. I was standing there talking with fucking Dave Grohl for a little bit. He's fully dressed normal. I'm just in my fucking underwear, just having a fucking conversation with them, you know? And Benj invited me. The Coachella guys were playing it that year. So, and then we got called. We got to go outside. They got to do their interview outside, right? This is New York Times Square, wintertime, -5 degrees. And they're like, all right, let's go. Like, everybody puts their coats on. And they're like, you're going to put a coat on? I'm like, no, I'm good, man. Straight up, go outside. Same thing. Underwear, no shirt, nothing. And we go up on this stage that's like in the fucking overlook of Times Square. And they're about to be interviewed. And I'm freezing. And just fucking, you know, tiny turtle dick, just dicks trying to crawl inside of me because it's so cold. And I remember they really wanted to talk to me because they were like, this is amazing that this dude's doing this. I don't know if it was Benjamin Joel or their management was like, no, which makes sense. They're like, focus needs to be on Good Charlotte, not on this fucking dude that's right. Hanging out with them.
Yeah.
So I wasn't allowed to be interviewed. But I'm standing behind the twins and talking to Paul. And I'm like, dude, I'm like, look at my dick. I'm like, I'm fucking freezing. Like, you could, 'cause I'm so cold. Like, you could see my dick in my underwear. Not realizing that the mics could pick that stuff up.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'm just standing there and I'm like trying to use the light because there's these bright ass lights, you know, and that was the only heat coming in. And when we got back inside, I remember it was Benj or Joel, and they were like, dude, they're like, we could totally hear you in our earpieces, which meant it was going through all the shit.
Okay.
So I'm just going in Paul's ear. You got to look at my dick, dude. Like, you know, those moments were fun.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, all that was there, I remember it, but there's no reason to not go back and relive the fucking cold dick moment again.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great third example. Tony, we just got, I guess, like a couple of general questions that then we'll let you go, because you know, this has been going a while now. So you obviously touched upon this, but like, I'm thinking of like celeb fans you've had over the years. Obviously you've mentioned some in this chat. I remember like that comedian Eliza Schlesinger. I think she was like a Mest fan.
Yeah.
Like, were there any other examples of that that you've noticed over the years? Because like, for example, my buddy was telling me Whitney Cummings' favorite band is MXPX, apparently. So
yeah. Oh really? That's fucking cool. Honestly, and this, I'm not trying to sound like, this isn't supposed to sound like egotistical in a way. I'm sure there's tons of people that are successful now that were fans of Mess. It's like, you just don't know it until you run into them, because it's generational shit, right?
Yeah.
Not because we were big or anything like that, but like with the comedian, like I would have never have known that. But their team reached out to us and was like, can we do some cross promotion because she's doing this tour and blah, blah, blah. And, I always say like, so there was this show, a kid's show here in the States. And I ended up, like, son would watch it all the time. And I recorded a segment of this guy doing like a kid's rap. And then I posted under like hashtag NWA, like all this stuff, like gangster rap, all that shit. A friend of his who was a fan of the band showed him. Then he was like, oh shit, that's cool. Cause he was a fan of Mask. So you, that shit happens by accident all the time. I've become friends with the guy since then. And like my kid thought, you know, it's cool. Like I think it's cool if I get to meet somebody that my kids are fans of, way cooler than real celebrities. But yeah, I mean, there was a time where, like, I feel like, you know, Billy Joe from Green Day years ago knew who I was. Cool. Okay. And that was like, just that alone, like him, you know, and I think I was in Chicago for a show once that they did, like when, you know, they always do those little secret shows. It was right before American Idiot, where they were doing four shows. One was in Chicago. I was able to get into it, where they played the record front to back. I got to hang out with the guys afterwards and shit. But we were both in the alley and like Billy Joe signing shit. Everybody's going crazy. And I come walking up, and I'm just trying to get Billy our new record. Like, it was our self-titled record, like 03, 04-ish. Yeah. And I'm like, hey, Billy, can I give this to you, whatever? And then, being that it's Chicago, too, everybody sees me. So everybody starts freaking out about me. And it was so, like, cool, but at the same time, I'm like, dude, like, stop. It's Billy Joe from Green Day. Like, I mean nothing on this level right now. Like, don't even. But it sort of got his attention of, like, who's that? And then he was like, oh, look. And he's like, oh, yeah, Matt. He's like, he's like, I thought you guys were from California, which everybody has always thought that.
Yeah.
You know, because our influences are California. But yeah, just the fact that he knew. And then, like, I've met him a couple other times, and he's always been super friendly and shit. And, like, you know, that type of shit's. That's the only time I'll ever be starstruck is those, the idols that have influenced me. Besides that, I don't give a fuck because I know that's some kid that got lucky on an acting gig.
Yeah.
And it's like, what does that mean to me? Some dudes on, like, actors don't do it for me. They're playing a role, reading some other lines, and then they're put in a movie. Why the fuck do I care that that dude has been in it? Like, big deal. It could have been any, like, I don't know.
Anyone,
like,
who's capable of delivering.
I don't get the concept of, I don't, yeah, exactly. Like, it could have been anybody. Like, I don't get the concept of fame when it comes to actors or giving a fuck. They're just playing a role. Yeah. Like, people that write songs that influence your life, that means something. They wrote something.
Yeah.
Never understood the acting thing, personally. Just me.
Are there any other sort of modern bands that are on your radar at the minute who've impressed you and are in your playlists?
I hate to say it, but I'm like the dude that's... Because our generation of bands have been putting out records, it's like... I'm listening to, I no longer have to say like, well, I just listen to all the old stuff that, you know, like I'm just listening to the new records of the bands that I grew up listening to fucking put out. It's like,
give us some examples of those.
I mean, new Alkaline Trio record, new Blink record, all this shit. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like anytime when, I mean, this was like 3 or 4 years ago, Face put out a really cool acoustic record. And then their full band lineup after that, I listened to a full,
My friend recorded that, actually. The face-to-face one, that is.
This was it called? Fucking, I don't want to say Disconnected. What was it called?
I should know because my buddy, Davey, did that. I forget what the record's called. It was about...
Davey.
Oh, you know Davey? Yeah, you know Davey.
Yeah, that record is fucking great. But, been listening, like, the New Experience is cool. But there's one band that I found a single, like, you know, your algorithm and shit, that Instagram scrolls through and the kids are doing like the new, what is it? Horizontal fucking, vertical fucking videos, whatever. There's this hook to us and I'm like, that's fucking rad. So I just watched it a bunch and then went listening to the song and, randomly found out that the band is from like the town next to the town that I grew up in, which is really weird. Okay. Like, but there's a band called Rematch.
I know that band. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like from like the next fucking town over from me. So that was really fucking weird. And then one kid in the band's like, the band's got like 10,000 followers or something on Instagram. Yeah. And then the one kid in the band's got like fucking close to 200,000 because he just writes these gnarly riffs all the time. Yeah. And it's crazy. I'm like, okay. He needs to figure out how to get that onto the band page too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
He's doing something right. But yeah, it's so that band's really cool. And then being local is fucking is always cool when you see that.
That's cool, man. I think we could probably wrap things up there. Like, we massively appreciate you giving us time once again.
Absolutely, Matt. Anytime, just let me know.
Yeah, good luck with the new single next
week. Yeah, look forward to that for sure. And I'll catch you in person early June as well, which will be cool.
Yeah, I'll see you then, buddy.
Nice one.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah,
thanks,
cheers, Tony.